rocking around the Christmas tree.
Have a holly jolly Christmas.
It's the most wonderful time.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell.
Tired of an endless loop of pop Christmas music? Coming December 24th, sacred music for the Christmas season, LutheranPublicRadio.org. Serenity. Stability. Solemnity. Lutheran Public Radio, sacred music for the Christmas season, coming Christmas Eve at LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Christ's birth, like this tree, is a reminder that God is always with us. We may neglect him, we may reject him, but he never forsakes us.
The New York-based and Washington-based, too, probably media powerhouses don't quite get religion. We don't get the role of religion in people's lives.
The colors of the rainbow went from blue on one edge of the rainbow to red on the other. And they saw in that a reminder that just as God once destroyed the world with water, he will again destroy the world, this time by fire.
Uber drivers around the world love listening to Issues Etc. on demand while we're waiting for a ride request.
It's no longer a freedom of the press kind of American constitutional phenomenon that the press is, in fact, a force that moves the events of history. This has probably been true since there has been a free press, but probably no more so than it is today when the press is ubiquitous. It's 24/7. It's all over the place, and we're getting our news from 1,000 different sources, if you count social media sources as well. How do we know what to trust? And when it comes to that old school mainstream media, as it's called, a cottage industry has grown up around distrusting the mainstream media. Is it in our best interest to have a trustworthy media and press? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. Live this Monday afternoon, December the 19th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking with Molly Ziegler-Hemingway of The Federalist about regaining media credibility and Facebook's attempts to limit fake news. We'll be looking forward to Sunday morning with Dr. Carl Fikencher, and then we're going to be talking about Adam and Eve remembered on the 19th of December by the church. Dr. Brian Gurman will be our guest of Concordia University, Wisconsin. Feel free to join us with a question or a comment over the course of the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-MY-IE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, and the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about regaining media credibility and fake news, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, senior editor of The Federalist. Molly, welcome back.
It's great to be back with you.
Is it in, as much as we love to hate the media and distrust them, is it in everyone's best interest that we have a credible media and press? If so, why?
There are a few reasons why it's very important to have a media establishment that people can trust at some level. And one is that the press provides a very important function of digging into potentials for scandal, corruption, evil. You know, all humans have a propensity toward evil, and it's good for our media to be able to look into bad things that are happening in politics or any other industry so that they can report back to the people. It's just a very important check. More than that, though, in America, our freedom of the press is rooted in an understanding that we should all be seeking truth at all times, and that seeking truth is an important natural right for humans, that this is our religious liberty is the foundational part aspect of this. And it's important that we have a free press that is credible, because truth is a reality, and we should be always trying to achieve a truthful state of being, and the press, it provides an important function there, too.
You have recently written, giving some advice on how the media might regain its credibility, especially after the presidential election, where just in terms of facts and prognostications, Almost everybody was really, really wrong, just as wrong as they could be. And the first piece of advice you offer is stop rewarding failure. What do you mean?
Well, first, I just want to note that this election saw not just an over-reliance on polls, but really just media failures all around. Our political media didn't do a good job of understanding the fundamentals of the race. They focused on the wrong things. They told people what to think rather than just covering what was happening. And you're seeing this. You would think that after the election of Donald Trump, there would be a moment where everyone kind of admitted that they had really messed up, that they had put all of their credibility on the line in service of electing Hillary Clinton, that she had lost, and that therefore they had lost, that their bet had not paid off. You didn't really see much of that. A few people admitted that they were too reliant on polls, but nobody has really gone through all the ways that the media failed. And instead, they are just shuffling people around from one publication to another. Some of the worst reporters are getting promotions. One example I was looking at was that one of the reporters who was exposed in the WikiLeaks scandal as having passed on copies of his stories to the Clinton campaign for prior approval. Not only was he not punished or fired or run out of journalism forever, he was hired by the New York Times. Mm. And so this is just one example of many of people not seeming to take their failures seriously.
I call that doubling down, wouldn't you?
It's more like quadrupling down, but yes.
You also say they should stop self-important delusional speeches. To what do you refer?
Well, media people, I don't know if this is true in other industries too, but media people really like to give each other awards. And even in the recent weeks after the election, you had a couple of prominent people accepting awards for their awesome journalism. Christiane Amanpour at CNN, Marty Baron at the Washington Post. And they gave these speeches where, first of all, they acted like they hadn't learned a single thing from the election. They were continuing to call, people right of center as these great threats to democracy and whatnot. And they continued to use very hyperbolic, self-important language. But also, they just didn't seem to, they weren't learning anything from this. And it was just it's just people are sick of hearing media people talk about how important they are without them seeming to learn anything from any of these these things that we're going through, like the failures of the 2016 election.
Now, you talk about distinguishing between narrative and fact, and that the media has pushed narrative over fact. What's the difference?
Well, one of the few interesting things that came out after the election was Michael Wolff, someone writing in the Hollywood Reporter, of all places, former New York Times person, saying that when he was at the New York Times, the editors came up with narratives to push for the entire year. This is where they would come up with a theme and an agenda, and whatever stories you wrote were supposed to function as a way to fulfill that theme or narrative for the year. That is very different from just reporting on what's happening on a given day, or even looking for trends that are happening and covering them rather than trying to affect the outcome. And you saw it with the failures of the 2016 media coverage, in that there were certain ideas that the media had set in their minds, like Hillary Clinton was a wonderful candidate who would be the first female president, and Donald Trump was worse than Hitler, and everything he said was stupid and wrong. And so they would, whenever anything happened, rather than just kind of looking at it objectively, they tried to force it into these narratives that didn't really fit with what people's actual experience of these two candidates was, and it really helped create this disconnect between the media and people who were looking at things with their own eyes and ears and interpreting them quite differently.
Now, you also advise that they not be gratuitously hostile to Trump. What is gratuitous hostility to the president-elect?
Right. I mean, Donald Trump is a very polarizing figure, and he says a lot of things that are stupid and wrong. It's very easy to have a negative view about the man for any number of reasons. At the same time, you can't just react to every single thing he does or says with this over-the-top hostility. I mean, it's hard to tell who's crazier sometimes, Donald Trump or the media. And if you do have to pick, many times you would pick the media, even though they think it's totally the opposite. There was this one reporter at MSNBC, Katie Tour, and she actually had a fairly, for her, anodyne comment she made when Donald Trump met with Kanye West. She said, facing criticism over canceling his business ties presser and Tillerson's ties to Russia, Trump trots out shiny celebrity to change the subject. So here she is. She's putting the worst possible construction on what people are thinking about Donald Trump's press conference, where he'll reveal what he's going to do about all of his conflicts of interest, where he said he needed more time to work it out. Also, his Secretary of State nominee, who some people really like and some people don't. And then she says that he's just meeting with Kanye West as a distraction. That's more than you can possibly know unless she can read people's minds. It's just this kind of gratuitous, constant, unrelenting hostility to everything, no matter how small or minor it is, that's causing people to just tune out a lot of media criticism of Donald Trump.
Are they getting it out of their system with about 30 seconds here? They're just, they got to get it out of their system.
I keep waiting for it to stop, and it just seems to be getting almost worse. And it's very weird that they don't see how this is playing with other people. It's extremely over the top, and I think people are just tuning them out. My colleague Mary Catherine says they dial it up to 11 everything that he says or does. And when you do that, people just start to go deaf.
Now, you say they should make systematic changes. That sounds pretty general. What are you talking about specifically?
This is the only thing that will work to regain credibility with the American people. They need to make massive cultural changes within their institution. They need to hire outside of their very narrow ideological viewpoint that they keep on hiring people from. They have no diversity of thought. I mean, this is both true in columnists and news reporters. Nobody at the Washington Post or New York Times understands people who voted for Trump or the issues that he cared about. You know, and there were many different types of people who voted for Trump. They need to do some major differences in how they hire, how they promote, who gets promoted to editor, where they place people. There's something very corrosive about working in Washington, D.C. or New York, which is where most media figures work. They need to make sure that people can work from other areas, that they have bureaus that are in these other places. They need to also have internal checks on themselves to see why they keep covering issues the same poor way, from like abortion to religion to politics.
We talked before about fake news. Most people are seeing it. Facebook is probably the place where it has proliferated. Most of us learn how to deal with it by simply muting people who share it, or by blocking the sources of it themselves. And then I don't have to be bothered with stuff to distract me from real news. But you say that in a lot of ways, fake news is a fake story. What do you mean?
Oh, it's the hysteria surrounding fake news is what's so ridiculous. Fake news, so long as people are sinful and lie, we will have fake news in our midst, and it can take different forms. When I was younger, you would read the Weekly World News about Hillary Clinton having an alien baby, or people would tell stories about something they heard, a Hollywood celebrity did, there were email forwards, or you can share on Facebook. This is just a feature that is continuous throughout human history. What the problem is people are acting like it's a particular problem now, which is not borne out by the facts, or that people are having particular trouble navigating fake news. In fact, Pew Charitable Trust did this study designed to support the theory that fake news was somehow this major problem. But instead, it showed that 84% of Americans had no problem figuring out what was or was not fake news, and that the rather tiny percentage of Americans who shared fake news, more than half had done it to point out that it was fake or to make fun of it or to have a laugh or whatnot. So it's not that it's not a problem or it's not an issue. Any of us who are on the internet know that either we've been duped or friends of ours have forwarded information, conspiracy theories, whatnot. It's just not a problem at the level the media want to say it is. Further, it is so obviously a deflection from the real problem, which is mainstream media is having a lot of trouble with telling stories that are true, whether it's Rolling Stone putting forth a hoax story about a gang assault at University of Virginia, or, you know, the story about the Santa in Tennessee who had a boy in his dying arms, or when you have these stories about hate crimes that later turn out to be hoaxes. And those are just smaller issues, or some of those are smaller issues compared to just the larger manipulations of truth through narratives, like the way they cover the same-sex marriage redefinition debate, the way they cover abortion. That is the problem that people are, these are the reasons why people don't trust the media. They know that they're not doing a fair job of covering the news, or that they're ignorant of our history or of our constitutional governance or any number of things. The problem isn't, you know, some silly site saying that Hillary Clinton has an alien baby.
I wonder if the meta-narrative of the whole fake news hysteria is, in fact, the mainstream media saying, look, Americans are dumb, and they believe fake news. They don't believe us. And since we can't outlaw dumb people yet, we're just going to try and get rid of fake news.
Well, there is this effort, it seems, to build up a wall to keep people in and so that the mainstream media can continue to have control over the people. They know that people rejected them. And to use just one example, the Washington Post did a survey where they actually asked Trump voters why they voted for him. They did this after the election, I will note, rather than before, when it probably would have helped them most. And so many of the voters said that they were doing it in response to a horrifically biased media or whatnot. So the media sense they are losing control. And yes, they're also just confused as to how people couldn't have had the same positive feelings about Hillary Clinton that they so clearly did. So they're trying to cling to these conspiracy theories and elaborate schemes that explain things rather than admit that maybe there was something wrong with the way the media covered this election from the beginning to the bitter end.
One of the points you make about the Facebook attempt to deal with fake news is that censorship is never really a good idea. Does this amount to censorship?
Well, and you know, I wouldn't say it's never a good idea, but it's always a bad instinct if that's where you're trying to go. I mean, sometimes there really is dangerous information out there, and it's worse to share it than to, you know, even if that means applying restrictive means. But it does have a feel of centralized control that is not healthy, and we should be cautious about it. This, at best, having a reliable source that can tell you that's truly fake news, that story is truly fake, it didn't happen, that can be helpful, and that's not scary censorship. But at worst, what it looks like is, because of the type of people they have involved in the fact-checking of these stories, they are people who have been proven to be biased and corrupt in the way that they investigate facts, their understanding of what is a fact versus what is an opinion. And so that's what's very dangerous, I think.
Molly, here's the thing that my reaction to the kind of the fake news flap, and that is, look, just because I didn't believe you, mainstream media, doesn't mean I was believing any fake news. I didn't know who to believe, but I certainly didn't believe fake news or the mainstream media. What are your thoughts there?
Right. Well, I don't think it's absolutely true. The distrust that people have with the media, and by the way, before fake news became the trendy thing to latch onto here in the last couple weeks, many months ago, there was a pretty comprehensive survey that showed that only 6% of Americans had a great deal of confidence in the media. We are in the truth-telling business. So if people don't have confidence in us, that's a crisis. That has nothing to do with fake news. And the more that we try to blame other people for what our problems are, the longer it will take for us to fix this. And this is very important. It actually was important that we had a media that could be trustworthy during the Obama administration. I would argue that we didn't. And it's also important that we have a media we can trust during the Trump administration, and somehow they're actually getting worse. So this is a big threat to civic life and our ability to get along well with each other in this country, to have shared understandings of current events and the how serious a given threat is and whatnot. So I really hope the media start taking it seriously sometime soon.
Molly Hemingway is senior editor for The Federalist. You'll find links to her columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Molly, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Folks, if you've enjoyed our interviews this year with Molly and Mark Hemingway, please consider making a year-end tax-deductible gift. No donation is too small. You can make a secure online contribution at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Issues Etc. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. That's Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for listening, and thanks for keeping Issues Etc. in mind at the end of 2016. When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Dr. Carl Fikencher. Looking forward to Sunday morning on this Monday afternoon. We're going to be looking at Christmas Eve, Christmas midnight, Christmas dawn, and Christmas day. That's a lot to deal with, but what can you say about Christmas that everybody doesn't already know? We'll start with that after this.
Rocking around the Christmas tree.
Have a holly jolly Christmas.
It's the most wonderful time.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell.
Tired of an endless loop of pop Christmas music?
Once in a while, David's city stood alone in God.
coming December 24th, Sacred Music for the Christmas Season, LutheranPublicRadio.org. Serenity. Stability. Solemnity. Lutheran Public Radio. Sacred Music for the Christmas Season, coming Christmas Eve at LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Are you looking for a last-minute Christmas gift? Reformation Gear has produced a new Martin Luther plush figure featuring the 16th century reformer holding the Bible and Luther's morning and evening prayers. Go to reformationgear.com, use the coupon code ISSUESETC, and 20% of your purchase will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. ReformationGear.com, the new Martin Luther plush figure, ReformationGear.com.
At Risen Christ Lutheran Church in Arvada, Colorado, we have simply become captivated by the hilarious notion that God has sent His Son, Jesus Christ, into the world to save the losers of this world, losers just like us. We proclaim the biblical notion that God saves sinners. Embracing the historic liturgy of the church, we confess that we are just that, sinners. Visit us online at risenchristlutheran.org.